You're listening to RevOps FM with Justin Norris. If I had to name the single biggest challenge for ops teams, it would have to be prioritization. We all have limited resources and we all have way more requests than we can ever handle, even if we worked a 24-hour day. So how do you deal with this problem? If you say yes to everything, you pretty quickly become a service department. You have no strategic input. You just do what you're told and life gets kind of miserable. At the same time, if you just set your own priorities and you don't have enough input from the business, you can quickly find yourself irrelevant and you can potentially find yourself out of a job. So there's a conflict here that needs to be resolved. And the best model that I've seen for tackling this problem is what some people would call the product management approach to managing MarTech or to managing your ops team. And this is where you effectively treat your stack as an internal product and ops as a product management team working on delivering features for internal customers. Today, we're joined by a marketing ops legend, Josh Hill, who has put this into practice in an enterprise setting. And he's going to tell us about how you implement this approach, what it means for prioritization, how you build the right team to support it, and a whole lot more. Josh, it's awesome to have you here today.
I'm glad to be here, Justin. It's a really interesting early topic for marketing operations pros, and I think I'm still exploring it, so I appreciate that you think I'm an expert at it.
I want to start with a quick overview of your journey. And before I throw that to you to give that to us, I just want to give credit where credit is due and acknowledge kind of a big impact, I think, that you've had on my career, like in the very early days of marketing automation and the nascent era of marketing operations. You were, I think, one of the first people to recognize the opportunity of this discipline of establishing yourself as a thought leader, as an expert with your early blog, Marketing Rockstar Guides, and in particular, just diving into the Marketo community when it had a leaderboard. I think yours was the face at the top of that leaderboard every day. You could see the investment you were putting into just almost becoming like the representation of that community. And it motivated me to dive in and to reply more and to build up my professional identity there. So maybe you can talk a little bit or touch on what led you to do that, but I would just love to understand how you got into this field and what you've done.
Well, a lot of people say something similar, and I'm glad that I had an impact on you and others with answering lots and lots of questions. I think that helped me think through the problems I was facing as well and dive into the technology and how it could actually be used to build experiences. How did I get into this? Well, you know, today, right, I build scalable GTM platforms and I support the full customer lifecycle, working with product, marketing, and sales. But that's not how it started, right? I was actually in sales, working on selling information products, which I thought about frequently. And then I moved into demand gen and I ran events and ads and all sorts of things. And because I was process-oriented and technical, I took on this implementation of Marketo, right? I chose Marketo and went in pretty deep and then became a consultant, as you know, and answered lots and lots of questions and took on larger and larger projects to the point where, you know, I was working on RingCentral's team, designing systems and teams to support their scale-up from $300 million to $2 billion in revenue. Working on next-generation omnichannel capabilities, radical improvements to speed to lead, and transformation of campaign operations, a lot more. But I was able to do that because I built up that work on working on little projects at a time, answering questions people had on the community and kind of thinking through, well, how would I solve that, right? And realizing that in many respects, a lot of these marketing automation platforms and even Salesforce is a workflow tool, and you can make it do just about anything you want. So knowing what it is you want to do, building that as a product, right, is important. You know, having a natural curiosity about these things is also important as well.
I want to give a shout out to the sponsor of today's episode, Knack. You know, I love marketing automation software, but let's be honest, the email and landing page builders are usually terrible. You can't make it nice without a developer, and marketers are going to find a way to break things or go off brand. You do not have time for that. So Knack is totally different. You set the guidelines and then give your users a building experience that's slick, modern, and beautiful. When they're done, everything goes to your map at the push of a button. And don't worry, it supports global teams, approval workflows. It's got your integrations. So head on over to revops.fm/knack. That's K-N-A-K. And get a special offer just for my listeners.
Do you remember
like when you had this recognition that this was a field that you could build a career around? Because it seemed to me in the beginning that you had a lot of like demand gen people buying Marketo and figuring out how to use it and kind of being like amateurs. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but they were not MarTech professionals. They were people in an adjacent discipline who were using this tool to do a particular job. And you, again, in my mind, were the first person who was like, wait a second, like, no, this is a professional discipline. I can establish myself in this way and treat it that way. Where did that recognition come from for you? Or where did that light bulb go off?
Yeah, I would say it was a couple months after my first implementation. And it was a funny, I have a funny story about that, which I actually don't share very often, is I was doing the project. I was maybe, it was live, maybe a couple weeks into seeing autoresponders go out, right? We never had autoresponders and I could manage them and it was saving a huge amount of time. And I was seeing that other people were getting traditional marketing projects that I wasn't. And I said, well, gee, you know, I feel like maybe I'm in a backwater now. Like I got sidelined because I was working on this technology. And I feel like, oh, now I'm in this marketing operations backwater. And that seems weird to say now, right? No one had coined marketing operations, or at least I hadn't come across it at that time. And after a couple of months departing the company, I was like, huh, you know, I really like doing that, right? Maybe I should make that my job. Right. And I've seen more and more jobs kind of coming up about like people needing demand gen and Marketo, because a lot of those, like you said, people were, demand gen was buying Marketo, was buying Eloqua. And there were no professional marketing operations folks, at least for most of the B2B companies. And because I had that technology experience in my past, like where I was a tech support, I ran sysadmin for Linux boxes and all sorts of things. I like that. And I'm like, well, I can take that approach and apply it to this technology so it's more secure, more managed effectively, what we might call marketing operations DevOps or something like that today, and put some discipline around it because no one else has that kind of unique set of experiences. Turned out some people did, which is great, but that's how I took it to the next level. But I want people to make sure they understand like IT style management of these technologies is important. I think you should master that, but that's not the same as product management.
And so that's where we want to go. And just before we do, you touched a little bit on the sort of scope and scale of some of the teams that you led. And I have a little bit of an inside view here because we actually collaborated with myself as a consultant. You were my client. So I had a bit of a window into what you were doing. And it was a big operation that you ran, particularly at RingCentral, which is where we worked together. A big team, lots of people, lots of complexity. It was huge. Can you just give a sense of like the operation that you had there?
So my team grew into more than 30 people with around the world with four or five teams, depending on the quarter we were talking about, where I did follow, you know, Ed Unthank's approach sort of naturally, but I became a little more aware of it later, right? And architecture, system analysts, not really programmers per se, but people who knew enough to do low to mid code kind of integration work and would ask the important questions about scale and ensure that there was a lot of cross-functional and cross-system work. They would do things like BRDs. I mean, everybody could, but that was more of their focus. There was kind of managing systems and campaigns. There's a front-end development team. And it was important to separate those because, at least at RingCentral, the motion and the systems are very different for customers versus prospect. How the campaigns were thought of were different. So you really had to understand each technology, each kind of data flow that was going on. And they were different. And that was only half of the marketing operations team. That we had marketing data, we had DevOps, and that had a whole other set of things going on. We had project management and production management, which was also very important. And people talk about those things as pillars, but I actually got the chance to practice it in real life and build those things with the team to support a large-scale system. And that led me to thinking about how do you do this at a very large scale? You know, you were the person who introduced us to a lot of other tools as well. So thank you for that.
Oh, glad to have done it. So thinking then about this product management approach, maybe just a definition, like how do you definitionally think about it? What does it mean? And was it something that you applied back then? Or is it something kind of just retrospectively looking back? You're like, this is the way that I would do it if I was to build that org again.
I did and I didn't, right? You know, when I think about products. I've been working with software, building software or ecosystems for a long time. And I would always think about, okay, well, how does this product work? How is it thinking about the world? And every product does have a point of view. I forget who talked about it. Maybe it was Scott Brinker. And Marketo had a point of view about how you handle B2B lead management and how much of that influences your choices of process. But getting back to your question, right? I love thinking about how customer service, how sales, how features, how other things work to integrate into a product experience. I wanted to be a product manager at one point. And, you know, on an amateur level, as you put it, right? Like I think about these things daily, right? I would talk with Marketo PMs about, hey, I think the product should work this way, right? It's not solving my actual problem. How do I solve my actual problem? In the hope that they would put that on the roadmap. And sometimes they did. And what's interesting is that when I started diving into understanding what a product manager does, as it's defined, you know, in the software world, PMs think about the same things that marketing ops pros think about. They're at this intersection of business, customer experience, approval processes, feature development, BRDs, product requirement documents. So it's all of these things. And the only other discipline that really works on that is marketing operations or RevOps, or even to some degree sales operations, where all of these threads come together to build something. So with marketing operations, we're building typically products around like an event experience or a lead flow experience or an internal sales product experience, right? So it can be a little bit different because it's more internal typically, but we're always thinking about the outside world and asking marketers, hey, are you sure you want that form that way, right? And building frameworks to help get those requirements and those experiences built. And this really didn't come up as a crystallized thought until a VP brought it up from a very large organization, like super large. And he comes by and he says, I want to bring in a product manager for marketing technology. We need strategy. And that was a little surprising because I thought we had strategy, but it did get me thinking about, okay, well, why is he saying this, right? What is a product management approach doing that's different than what I'm doing? There are some differences, but there are a lot of similarities. So over the last couple of years, I've been researching that and kind of understanding how are they different? How are they not? Do they just talk differently, but it's doing the same thing? And largely, yes. If you ask ChatGPT or the internet, you know, what does a product manager do? It's going to give you something mild, like, well, it's responsible for developing and managing products. Okay. Marketing operations focuses on executing marketing strategies and optimizing marketing processes. Not very helpful, and it's kind of incomplete, but it's also true. In many ways, it's a messaging question. So when I think about marketing operations, we're often at the bleeding edge of a business, of marketing, making an experience come to life for a marketer, for a customer. Whether it's in campaign operations or architecture, you're kind of trying to figure out how does the rubber meet the road? And guess what? Product managers do the same thing, but they don't talk about it exactly the same way.
So is it about, in some cases, just adopting a product management lexicon? Like instead of saying like, hey, I have a request, say, all right, well, this is a feature and I'm going to put it in my roadmap and we'll develop it in sprints and, you know, just adopting that terminology? Or is there something more fundamental at the root of how you think about what you're doing that comes with the product management approach?
You can do that. I suspect a lot of us already are doing that. So what does a PM do, right? Is probably familiar to people who are particularly marketing technology architects or more experienced pros. You're aligning experiences to the mission or the customer experience. You're enforcing product boundaries against a strategy. Are we going to do something or not do something, right? How do we treat our customers, whether it's internally or externally? And sometimes you have to think about both in marketing operations, right? If I'm building a privacy product to capture opt-ins and help be in compliance, how does that whole end-to-end process work from the branded page and interaction that an actual customer or non-customer has down to how do we use it inside our internal systems? You know, how do we get all the approvals for that? And we build products with customers, with engineers. We manage all the stakeholders involved from, you know, VPs, your day-to-day stakeholders, whoever's asking for a feature. Someone comes to me and says, hey, I want to send gifts to our prospects or our customers for some reason. Yeah, we can bring in a vendor to do that. But that workflow that goes around it, that's a product. How we use that vendor is a product. And like you said, we do build features, right? And that ideally is managed through a process or business requirements doc, or if you're going to be a product manager, it's a product requirement doc. They're not different. They all have user stories. They have jobs to be done. And some of us have borrowed from agile and product management terminology to in our day-to-day work. So you're probably already doing this. And I think it's really important to do that if you're going to do an RFP, or if you're creating a new workflow, which a workflow can be a product. You know, if you're delivering specifications to engineers, you're creating wireframes and experience workflows, you're doing UX and creative on your team, right? I had a front-end development team. What did we talk about a lot? The user experience. We had to build wireframes for certain situations. You know, how do we create capabilities for a marketer or for our customers or our users to do something? Did we get the requirements right for that? Did we build a minimum viable product, which a lot of us use that terminology? We do testing, UAT, launch decision points, feedback loops. So you're already doing all these things. Now, there is a difference though. Product managers, marketing operations folks, we are interdisciplinary. We're at this intersection of business, marketing, demand gen, sales, user experience, UI, front-end development. We have to know the back-end pretty well or back-end enough. Maybe we know some SQL and some Python, DNS, and email marketing. And that all goes into being a product manager, right? And understanding the customer lifecycle. Now, where I'd say there are some differences, not just in terminology, is product managers sometimes say that they're the CEO of a product. Sometimes they don't like that, and that's a debate. But they are closer to understanding the business impact. They're trying to build a business. And they'll have core metrics like a North Star metric or aha moments. And they're going to leverage product data and telemetry and build that in and understand how people interact with the product and whether that feature is working, delivering whatever it is they want, like more and more usage typically, right? Our Slack users inviting more people from their organization or outside their organization. Marketing ops doesn't really do that typically. Now, you might, if you're saying like implementing, you know, sales automation platform, right? Do people send out emails from it? Are they adopting it? And I've used that to help manage the MarTech stack, right? If someone's not adopting a product or something I built, maybe we should discontinue it or change it. But we don't typically think of it in that way. And that, to me, that's the real difference. The monetization is the real difference between the two functions.
What you just said to me goes to the heart of the matter in terms of the role, the function, the orientation that marketing ops should have. And I agree with you that we typically don't do it as a discipline. Quite often we're getting these requests, and even when we're delivering them, we're thinking about what's the best way to deliver this architecturally? Is it going to be robust? Is it going to be scalable? What role do you think marketing ops should have? This is like the big question for me in assessing the potential impact of that request. Like, hey, I know you want to do chatbots that, you know, send AI-enabled text messages and gift baskets whenever somebody does XYZ, but like, is this going to be a good idea? Is this going to be revenue impacting? In other words, should marketing ops take some of that product-oriented mindset of like really looking at the revenue impact of what they're working on and push back more against their teams?
So when we think about pushing back, it can be done in different ways in different situations. I would think more about that in first thought, which is the ROI or the impact of the product you're going to build. So whether someone's asking you to build something or has a good idea or an idea about something, right? The first thing I want to do is understand that business requirement and understand the complete workflow and experience they're trying to give either the internal person or the internal person and the customer, whether the customers pay it or not, and elicit that out and get it into a workflow or wireframe, something that we can kind of be more tangible and react to. Then understand, okay, well, if we did these things, what's the goal here, right? Do we want someone to fill out a form? Okay, what does that mean for us? Is that they're going to register for an event? And that's, you know, an obvious pipeline generation. Is it going to reduce costs greatly because we automated something for us or our customers? Are we going to enable growth that could not be done before, like with a click-to-calendar solution, right, where it supposedly will reduce friction in the meeting process and increase our number of meetings that we get per day, and therefore that should lead to an expected revenue that's a lot higher? And that's the kind of question you need to really ask, especially when you're prioritizing work is I need an ROI metric in order to have a conversation and to show you where this project is going to live in the queue. I always loved working on win-back products because there was a clear connection between what I did and the revenue. If you're going to create a chatbot, which is another one of my favorites, is that typically does have a connection between building the product and delivering revenue because you're getting someone to sales or you're getting someone to the customer service and increasing an NPS score or getting an upsell opportunity, whatever that is. And I built those products. And in many ways, it was managed like a product, even if we didn't talk about it that way. But there are other things like, building a CDP or, we're going to create a process that's going to reduce costs or something. You have to really think through the implication of that build to the business, right? So theoretically, a CDP could create some self-service opportunities, although that I think is overblown. It could unify enough of our data and identifiers to better personalize the product experience or the website so that theoretically, at least, that will increase the number of conversions through the funnel. And that has an impact on revenue. So you can definitely tie it back, but you need to think through that. And like you said, that hasn't always been an obvious thing for marketing operations to do. But as I talked about in a couple of presentations I did on building a business case, you do have to do that. And that's where the pushback happens, is you have to ensure that your stakeholders are helping you build that business case. Typically, Moss is not the business owner. We might be the technical owner, but if you don't have a business partner who is on the hook for delivering dollars from something you build, then you're just building stuff. Maybe it gets used, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. You should never have tools that don't have a business owner.
Think about that relationship between MOPS and the teams we support. In my little intro, I kind of presented a straw man vision of, a few different ways that relationship could be structured. They were based on reality, though. I think a lot of the teams do find themselves in a position where they're getting handed a list of priorities and like, here's the things we need you to do. Here's the tools we want you to implement. That's not a great place to be, not just for ops, but it's not good for the business because there isn't any of that pushback. And I think on the flip side, and I've seen this more in an enterprise setting, maybe you have too, where you have a team that's built such a huge kind of moat around themselves that everything is just like, no, or, oh, it'll be on the roadmap in a year. And they just seem completely unresponsive to needs of the business. I think I've seen this probably more with CRM teams than with marketing ops teams, but sorry to say that, CRM teams. And at that point, you end up with like shadow IT or people hiring their own external consultants. How do you think about the types of approaches that are out there and how to move from one polarity or the other towards this, what I would think of as a more balanced approach, where it's more of a true partnership delivering on business outcomes versus a power struggle?
Well, ideally, that's the leadership saying the right thing. And I've seen this too in many organizations, right? Where you get the hippo or what I call the VP stomp, where you got to do something. No explanation, no discussion, no review of best options to achieve that goal, maybe not even a discussion of what that goal really is in some cases. There was someone who posted something with that thought the other day on LinkedIn where they were very much like, MOPS is the saying no to me. And they were very upset about this. And I really wanted to push back on that person because it felt like every conversation with someone who hasn't taken the time to explain what they want to achieve. It's like, I didn't say no. I'm thinking about your problem. And that often gets interpreted as no, because I didn't do it in the last 5 minutes. These things don't happen in 5 minutes, usually, or even 30 minutes. And it really depends what it is you're trying to achieve. And that's what, I built the journey doc process for, the business requirements doc process. It feels slow to people who just want it now. And the reason that process exists is to ensure we're actually delivering what you want and what you really want. And understanding that so that we don't show up with a product or a hack that actually didn't deliver anything, because that has definitely happened before, or everyone misunderstands each other. It's a way to avoid misunderstandings. And any product manager will have the same problem where they get ideas from customers or they're trying to solve a customer problem. They build a PRD and they're trying to explain it to the engineers who are already working on their roadmap or they have their own ideas. And that's fine, or they might have a better way of solving it, but is it actually solving the customer problem or is it how they think about the customer problem? And then you get conflicts in the prioritization. And that's really what one of the things I actually kind of learned very clearly from product management interview videos is you always have to connect back what you're doing to the strategy of the company and the product. You know, it feels a little business casey, which is fine, but it makes a good point, right? Like if we're building a product that, let's just say, emails 10 million people a day to try to get them to respond, but our whole strategy and customer branding is about being nice to people and treating people well for whatever reason, right? I'm just kind of making up a business strategy. And we have that branding, but we don't treat people that way, right? We're going to have a big mismatch in how people perceive us, and we're probably going to hurt our brand. And product manager, marketing ops professional with some experience is going to often say, like, hey, this doesn't feel brand aligned. Are you sure you want to treat people this way? Are you sure that image you're giving us is not brand aligned? Because we see everything that comes through the queue, and then we're going to push it back to creative or ask you to get a different approval. And those processes exist to protect us and the company from making a big mistake. But we could build anything you want. It's just, is that really the best thing to do for us, for the customer? When I think about product management, when I think about the CRM team, when I think about marketing ops does, the CRM team, the enterprise applications teams, they get into difficult situations because if they pull out the Jenga piece, it can break critical processes. And if, especially if you're a public company, you have SOX compliance, you have impact to street numbers, you cannot do that. You do not break things like that. I mean, I've seen people ask for a field where for whatever reason, the CRM team just does it and 10,000 ops get deleted or get closed out without proper procedures. And then everything blows up in the emergency Slack channels. And I'm not saying that happened to any particular company, but I've seen and heard things, right? Well, that's because a process got bypassed. So when I built an SMS product, and my architect did the hard work, so I got to give her credit for that one. We designed everything out. How do we treat people? When should this happen in the process? How do we do an MVP so we don't just spam everybody who could get an SMS? How do we even know if this person has a cell phone, if this is a cell phone number? Did we run this by the privacy team who actually had a lot of good advice about that? And then we could launch it and test it. And, oh, by the way, we came up against regulatory issues and maybe we can't do the SMS product for a while because we have to get certain other approvals, right? And the environment changed. Product teams, product managers come against the same problem all the time. So I don't like it when people say, oh, that team is saying no. It's they're trying to protect themselves because they got burned or the company is going to get burned. So it's up to escalation process to figure out what that prioritization should be and try to, as some people would say, break through. But I would say it's more about, if you need to escalate something, to me, that tells us that there are conflicting priorities across the silos, but they're also not a clear understanding of the strategy that could help us build a rubric or an ROI metric around, should we be doing this?
When you think about that difficult conversation that you're describing, you know, the stakeholder that feels you're saying no, and you're trying to understand, you know, the job of the product manager, broadly speaking, is to solve for the needs of the customer, you could say. In this context, who is your customer? Is it the end customer that you're trying to sell to and serve? And so you're looking at it through, is what we're trying to do here serving that person? Or is the customer the internal stakeholder who you're saying, you know, as long as I deliver the needs for them and they get what they want, whether it ultimately serves the needs of that end customer, you know, is up to them. And I've heard arguments and I can see pros and cons of both points of view. I'm curious where you land on that question.
Well, it depends, right? Like, what are we building, right? So if I'm building self-service segmentation tool, that's typically an internal product. I don't have to worry or think through a lot of the customer impacts other than maybe like ensuring that we have certain privacy rules around it or communication limits, for example. I have to worry about, did I understand the goal and is it actually going to deliver that? And is it, I don't know, easy to use? Is that one of the requirements or do you need a NoSQL? I would assume in a self-service situation, you would want to have as little code as possible and sort of a natural understanding of how someone would think about a segmentation and how to enable them to do it. And you might have an MVP and you might build out additional things. And I've done that. In a But more difficult conversations tend to be someone wants it now and didn't talk to you ahead of time and think through their entire process. And you try to bring them through the requirements process just to really understand what are we trying to achieve, right? Get them to explain themselves. And they don't always love that, but sometimes people warm up to the process, especially if you deliver. And other times it's been, okay, this is an internal and an external impact. I always think of events or privacy in that sense because they often have internal processes and procedures that we need to build out for, and there's customer experience impacts. So if we don't have certain privacy operationalized, that could impact the customer in negative ways, or as well as the company in negative ways. And people don't love it when you bring up potential hurdles. But these are all things we can just make decisions on. These aren't inherently hurdles unless you want to do something that's just illegal. Okay, you want to build a CDP, here's what it's going to take. We can either stop doing these things, or we can hire an agency or hire a team to get it started or launched. Do we have the right business case for that? And working with them. And I've had great partnerships with many stakeholders about building that business case to be effective and either making a decision like, yeah, that's probably not going to have an ROI. Maybe we should forget about that. Or, yeah, this does have a great ROI and it's going to pass all of our IT procurement and financial teams with flying colors.
That ROI question can be troubling because I think CDP or self-service segmentation project that you described is a good example. You could have a model project in the sense that you work with your stakeholder, you define their requirements, you deliver it, it works well, it's scalable. And then the other question is, as a result of having that capability, were they actually able to send better communications that produced more revenue? So it's like the project was successful on one side, but then did it ultimately meet its goal, the goal that the marketer had? Do you need to care about that? Or is there a certain size and scale of company at which point the separation of powers is such that you just can't really have that conversation effectively anymore?
Yes. So one of the things I had in that presentation I talked about is I can make a growth estimate, right? Having a meeting tool is going to likely get us 25% more meetings, and that'll justify the cost of this tool and implementation. And ideally, you built in a process and a set of metrics, and you've captured that data so that in a month, 2 months, 6 months from now, you can actually compare before and after and say, yep, we achieved that, or nope, we didn't. And you know, ideally, you can make a harder call and say, okay, well, we didn't achieve the goal, but it's still paying for itself. Okay, let's investigate how we can increase it. Or it's completely not doing anything. Do we cancel it? The sales squeal about it? Do we just keep it there? That's a little squishier goal. I tend to be a little harsher and say, like, well, it didn't achieve the goal. Maybe we should stop spending money on it, right? And I've done that. We had a potentially great idea, spent a lot of time building it out with the vendor, and they used 15% of it. And I asked the stakeholders, did this change anything? Did you achieve your adoption goal because of this product? And they said, nope, which is great, because sometimes they don't admit those things, right? They don't want to say that they were wrong. But data doesn't lie, which is nice, usually. So I said, okay, well, we're going to cancel it. And you know what happened? It turned out we could have built the same thing with VelocityScript if we had just thought about it a little harder instead of rushing into it. That's where you do have to kind of push back a little bit and think like, what options do I really have? And could I have built an MVP for free rather than putting, you know, a huge amount of effort and direct dollars into this? I've also had other products where we did the segmentation thing and it wasn't really for hyper segmentation, although that's a favorite topic of mine. It was just to try to speed the marketer to be at the keyboard and say, okay, how many people can I get for this invitation, for example, instead of waiting for 3 or 4 days for a SQL expert data engineer to do this because of the various complexities. And it didn't really get adopted and probably had 2 or 3 versions of that built because of poor adoption. We could debate what that was, but at some point we kind of just stopped maintaining the product. And that's why we have BRDs and ROI analysis to try to figure out, is this really worth the effort? And following up on that process to understand, did we actually achieve that goal? And sometimes you do, which is great.
Hopefully more often than not.
Ideally, yeah.
So you're constantly making these sorts of decisions, but they don't happen in a vacuum. Ideally, with a product, you have a roadmap, a longer-term plan, how long that can be, typically depending on the size of the company and how fast or slow it moves. How do you think about that process of building a roadmap? I know sometimes when I sit down with a blank page, you can be overwhelmed by the different possibilities and all the different things you could be doing. So how do you bring structure to that?
Well, roadmapping is also a product management technique as well as an IT technique. And it's very much the same for MOPS. It's very much the same for a product or an enterprise apps team, right? What's the strategy of the org? And that should determine your priorities and generally your methodology. If that's not communicated effectively, then that's going to create a lot more conflicts across the organization because you don't have a rubric, you don't have an ROI base to make comparisons without escalation. And you want to have ROI prioritization of your roadmap so you minimize the impact of a hippo and, of course, your feelings. Interview stakeholders and certainly bring your own opinions. Look at the marketplace. Look at the strategy of the larger company and the other and your competitors, ideally, right? What are they doing? Are they seeing success? And do that gap analysis of your capabilities versus where you think you want to go and where the marketers and sales team thinks they want to go. And map that back to your goals, your timing. And then, of course, always outcomes, right? Are we getting an ROI? And when are those milestones? And when should we actually achieve that ROI? And of course, you know, is that cost reduction? Is that a revenue gain? What's that total cost of ownership? Really kind of think through all those pieces, right? If we're going to build a CDP, do we have all of our other data ducks in a row? And what would that cost us? And what would that help us achieve? So if your overall strategy is we're going to have omnichannel personalization, you're going to make different decisions in your roadmap to achieve that. If you're doing a PLG motion, you're going to have different decisions and milestones. If you're doing PLG plus SLG, you'll have different tools and different needs and different capabilities.
Very tactically, how do you communicate what the roadmap is? Do you have Google slide deck? Do you have a wiki page? Because I find that's a big area of either concern or stress or frustration for stakeholders when they want something, but you're saying not right now, but then they're like, well, where does it sit? And they're like, they kind of want this visibility. How do you provide that?
Well, it's about knowing your audience. You know, the technical schematic is generally for you and the IT team. I wouldn't show that to anyone typically outside. You know, your roadmap could also be missing something they ask for. And you could show them the roadmap and say, if you want this in the next 6 months, which is usually how long XYZ would take, we have to change the roadmap. And this is how we could do that. I think educating marketers and salespeople about those capabilities is really important. If you're not doing that every quarter, they tend to forget and then they go off and buy something. And you're like, well, I could have done that for you in 10 minutes. Why did you go off and buy something? Oh, we didn't know. Too late. But you did know because it's on the wiki page. Well, they don't know that. They're not going to go look at that, right? And that's why, you know, procurement processes are important to try to catch them before they go too far. Yeah, I mean, a wiki page can help. A spreadsheet can help. Ideally, it's some sort of slide or visual that explains capabilities possibly against the funnel or customer lifecycle. I've tried different versions of that. I don't think there's any one solution that works for every company in all situations. There was a really great set of slides, and I don't think I downloaded it, but someone posted on LinkedIn in one of those little click things that slide through that you can't really download. And they were explaining how the PLG motion can work. And it was kind of a very simple set of steps. And it was in a multi-slide version, which I thought was actually kind of helpful. Like, here's the motion. And then here are increasingly detailed views of the kind of tool you would need to enable that part of the motion and that messaging, adding a sales motion to it. You know, where does your product fit into it? It doesn't have to describe your every database and data flow, but it kind of generally described the motion. And I thought that was actually pretty helpful and was probably digestible by most senior leaders. But any sort of capability guide, I had a lot of different views, as well as a giant deck. It was part of our marketing enablement effort. And we had a wiki and we had an image. I also had, 200 slides explaining every tool we had and who used it, who owned it, why it was being used, what it could do. Theoretically, you could search that. Did anybody really do that? I don't know. But it was a more helpful guide for my team because it showed everything. And not just my team, but all the other teams that we worked with. So you could see the whole ecosystem and capabilities. So I don't have a good answer for you that's going to be the silver bullet.
No, and I don't think it's universal, but it's, having that something with the right level of detail that is accessible, that gives people what they want, but that doesn't become, a homework assignment in and of itself that sucks a lot of oxygen out of the room.
you know, if we're going to bring it back to product management for a moment, like these things are always living documents, right? You can reprioritize depending on your stakeholders, your customers, the changes in the marketplace, right? Like if AI wasn't on your roadmap a year ago, it probably is now, right? And, you know, engineers are also going to push back on aspects of it or offer their own advice that might impact how you want to think through the order in which things get done or might make it simpler for you to achieve certain things if you kind of walk through the specifications and they can give you feedback on the best way to achieve that. And you might keep that as a living document, but it's really up to you as the product manager of your go-to-market platform to keep that in front of engineers and your team, stakeholders, as well as executives. And I know that's hard because I've done that, and it's hard because you're doing all these other things they ask you to do. You're trying to actually execute on the roadmap. So do you have time to flash it up every now and then and say, hey, this is what we achieved. This is where we're going. This is what has changed. But you do have to do it as a senior MOPS leader.
I saw a scenario recently where something broke, you know, that you would consider to be pretty vital to the business. And it had a product impact or product input was required to fix it. And yet, even with that happening, you know, it wasn't like the product team just jumped on that and said, yeah, we're going to drop everything and fix that. It said, we need to review this against all our priorities, and then we need to arbitrate what's going to take precedence. And I thought that was an impressive display of cool-headedness and rationality because, yep, I know that there's a fire there, but actually there's already three fires over here, or there's a water leak here. And like, we still need to always have that assessment. And they had, obviously through long experience, the courage of their convictions and the sort of fortitude to stick to that process, even though something really significant had gone wrong. I don't often see MOPS teams have that same kind of fortitude and courage of their convictions, I guess, in those situations. Like, okay, great, like that you want to do this or this is broken, like, here's all the other things. How do you think we cultivate that? Is it just sort of rewiring our brains, or how else can we do that?
Yeah, ultimately, you can only control your own actions and reactions. So you're right. Whoever said that was very much in control of themselves and very confident in their position and process. And that does need to be cultivated. And having a good coach, a good executive leader on your side can help that. Having clear incident processes and documentation can help build that motion just because, you know, you're following the triage process or the prioritization process. And that's why it's also, again, important to have an ROI-based approach to prioritization that matches your company strategy, because you can always point and say, well, you guys agreed that we're going to rank these based on ROI, and your ROI is here and these other projects are up here. So I'm going to do those first. That takes discipline on your part. But it also takes discipline on the part of the executives. They need to be clear about the ROI, about the priorities of the business. They need to have that discussion together, not in silos. And that takes discipline on their part. And if that's not happening for some reason and they're stomping their feet, you know, that's where you escalate, right? Or, you know, get everybody on a phone call and say, hey, look, we got this conflict about priorities. XYZ said they wanted this. This is where it falls into the process. These other things are a lower priority right now. If you want to change, that's fine. Let's figure it out now before we get too far, whether that's a fire or it's a project. And that's a personal thing that somebody has to really build into their leadership team.
So maybe just final thoughts, wrapping up this topic. Let's say somebody is not in this product management mode right now. Their team has a sort of different posture in relation to their stakeholders, but they want to make this transition. What are like kind of the simple first, second, and third things they can do to start to make this evolution a reality?
I think first recognition is to think that, especially if you've been doing MOPS for a while, you're probably doing half of the things a product manager does, but you're just not thinking that you're doing product management. So that's one thing. You can just say, hey, I'm a product manager now. And then that will get you into a learning mode to say, okay, well, what else does a product manager do? And, you know, there's a couple of things that you're doing today. So you're doing things like pain points and requirement gathering. You're building features, whether that's a event in a box program template or an entire chat workflow or whatever, right? You might have some goals and metrics. You might have some feedback loops already with your stakeholders. Are they adopting this product? Is a customer using it? Is it generating revenue? Is it tied to revenue? So you're doing maybe like three or four out of the eight core things. To add as you grow is to say, okay, well, you might want to look at using a framework to validate and prioritize, whether it's an ROI framework or a larger view of the business And what's that strategy the business is taking? What business are you actually in? Do you understand the business owner's metrics? Do you understand the potential market scope of your opportunity in the larger scale business, right? Whatever that is, right? Do you fully understand the target market, the buying teams, the ICPs, and does your database validate those? Are you close to monetization? And you don't have to be necessarily, but you know, if you own a chat product or you're building out certain things that impact revenue in some way, like certain kinds of campaigns or workflows, make sure you know that number. Talk about that number. Winback was easy for me to prioritize it. I love that example because I could call up the person who requested it and I said, what's your revenue change from the time before and after? And they would tell me. And we love building for them because they always told us how well we were doing. But don't just make it dependent on them, right? Build that into your process. Understand the goal of the product itself. What is the aha moment that the product manager of your product is building? And do you have it in your database? Are you working on projects related to it? Should you be? Maybe you should be. Can you have that conversation with the customer lifecycle team or the product manager of the business that you're in? And that will help you obviously better align with the business and your business stakeholders. And a lot of people talk about this on LinkedIn, but the product management discipline is typically closer to a business. And the more you can talk about the business, as they always say, right, the more executives will be aligned with you, or you'll be aligned with the executives, and the more they'll view you as not an operations function that's there to serve them. They'll view you as that partner, and you won't get flamed on LinkedIn by people who claim you're not paying attention to their needs, because you actually are, because you understand the business that they're actually in and you're supporting it.
That's a great note to end on. Josh, I want to thank you for joining me today and the knowledge and support you've shared kind of with the community at large and with me personally over the years. I'm really grateful for it.
Always glad to do it, Justin. Thank you for having me.
Hey, everyone. I want to invite you over to the RevOps FM Substack community, where you can sign up to get rough transcripts, show notes, longer form articles, and other bonus content. Just head over to revops.fm/subscribe to get free access. I'd also love to know what you thought of the episode and to hear suggestions for topics you want to learn about. Feel free to leave a comment on Substack or send me an email at justin@revops.fm. Thanks for listening.